This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. I'm Caleb Brown. How do social, political, and economic freedom interact to produce the outcomes we all value? Safety, high incomes, education, and others. The Human Freedom Index is an attempt to detail various freedoms and how they interact. Ian Vasquez is one of the authors of the report. We spoke last week.
How does this differ from other reports that tend to focus on economic freedom?
Well, this is a broad measure of human freedom. It takes into account economic, personal, and civil freedom. And so it doesn't just focus on one aspect of freedom. And it's fairly comprehensive. We're using 79 distinct indicators for 159 countries in those broad areas, so that it's really the first human freedom index of its kind that is as comprehensive.
What are the best predictors, to the extent that we have them, of outcomes that we all value, like high incomes, sanitation, that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, we see that there's a strong relationship between high levels of human freedom and prosperity and access to safe drinking water and longevity and all sorts of things. And one of the reasons that we put this out, which is really an empirical measure of the level of human freedom in so many different areas, is to be able precisely to look at the relationship between the different kinds of freedoms and how they interact with outcomes and with each other. So we've put this data out, and the research on that is beginning, but it's fairly clear that human freedom plays a central role in human progress. We just have to do more research in that regard.
We know a lot about economic freedom and how it predicts certain things with respect to outcomes, but what are some of the things that are sort of less tangible, that are sort of harder to understand about, you know, personal freedom and how that is either a cause of or a product of outcomes that we value?
Well, I mean, we're looking at broad areas like the rule of law and safety and security, and there isn't any guidebook as to how much weight to give those variables, even though we think they're important. So we give them a certain amount of weight. We think that we're doing a reasonable job there, and we let people determine on their own, because this is a transparent report where all the data is made available. If they disagree, if the reader disagrees, they can give it its own weight to try to determine the answer to that question. What is more important? And I think that as researchers start looking into this database, they're going to be coming up with interesting answers. It seems to me that the rule of law and safety and security is a fundamental area of freedom. If you don't have that, it's very difficult to have other freedoms. But once you have that, there's a lot more that needs to be done: freedom of movement, freedom of association, freedom of expression, and so on, that can come out of that.
Rule of law seems like a pretty fuzzy, or at least a very difficult measure to get at. How does this report assess rule of law in, you know, various, you know, widely varying regimes around the world?
Well, we really have two measures of rule of law. One is it relates to economic freedom, so that if there's good respect for property rights and contract, and the court system will uphold those as well as some other measures, then a country has a decent rule of law. We also look at rule of law from the perspective of due process, from the perspective of how a defendant is treated by the government, whether he gets treated fairly or is abused, that kind of thing. So we use databases that are from the World Justice Project and from other sources that are reputable, including the World Bank, on rule of law.
Who did the best? Who did the worst?
The top countries are Hong Kong, Switzerland, New Zealand, Ireland, and Denmark. Those are the top five jurisdictions. And Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom actually tie for sixth place, with Finland and the Netherlands coming in afterwards. So those are the top 10 countries. And that basically means that most of those countries, all of them actually, score highly both on personal and on economic freedom. And in fact, Switzerland is the one country out of that list that is in the top 10 of both indexes.
All right. So in terms of trends, this is a relatively new report. So it's hard to see a trend line in the overall picture. But of course, we know that economic freedom around the world hasn't been so hot lately.
No, what we've seen, especially since the onset of the financial crisis in 2008, is that a lot of, especially the OECD countries, the rich countries, went through a period where there was a decrease in economic freedom, and then more recently a recuperation, an increase. And countries like the United States certainly had a pronounced drop. And it's starting to pick up again, but is still not, in the case of the United States, back up to the level of where it was before the crisis, certainly not before its what I would call a long-term decline beginning in the year 2000 or so that the United States has had in economic freedom. And if you look at overall human freedom, sticking to the United States, you see that from 2008, which is when our data begins for broad human freedom measures, the United States drops in ranking from 16th to 23rd place this year, or 2014, which is the last year for which we have data available. So the United States is no longer, it's no longer a country that you can call the bastion of liberty, as I think many Americans traditionally have seen this country. One of the things that we can look at with this data, for example, is the relationship between human freedom and other outcomes like political regimes. We define human freedom as the absence of coercive constraint. And so it's the idea that you can lead your life the way that you want as long as you respect the equal rights of others. And one of the things that this report permits us to do is to measure human freedom and compare it to outcomes like political regime. And we find that there's a strong relationship between human freedom and democracy, even though they're not the same thing. And in that sense, Hong Kong being at the top of the list is an outlier. It's a very unique experiment. And I think that in the years to come, it'll be very useful to see how its freedoms hold up, even as people are advocating for more democracy there. And at the same time, the Communist Party in Beijing wants to apparently intervene more in that city. So that's going to be useful to have this objective indicator to be able to measure actually what we're observing. Other things that we can observe from the data is that if you look at the way that countries or regions rank in terms of overall freedom, economic freedom, and personal freedom, the tendency is for the least free countries overall to have relatively higher levels of economic freedom compared to personal freedom. And as you become more free, countries tend to have greater personal freedom than economic freedom. And that's consistent with the view that as countries that are backward in development and human freedoms start to increase their levels of economic freedom, at some point that economic freedom looks like it sustains other freedoms and nourishes them. And one of the conclusions of this report is that you have to have the broad array of freedoms to sustain each other. And certainly, if you want to have a high level of personal freedom, you better maintain high levels of economic freedom.
Ian Vasquez is co-author of The Human Freedom Index, available today at cato.org. Subscribe to this podcast at iTunes, Google Play, and with Cato's iOS app. And follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.